Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with 94-year-old Ralph Rush of Houston, California, a veteran of the 89th Infantry Division in World War II. In a few moments, we'll hear how he came upon the first concentration camp to be liberated by the Americans in World War II. But when we left off, he was in France, early 1945. He had spent a couple weeks doing the dangerous work of clearing a minefield. And eventually, he had convinced his superiors to have German prisoners, some of whom had laid out minefields like that, do the work instead. The gruesome reality, Ralph, is that it cost some of those prisoners their lives.
One or two guys a day, so it was pretty scary for them, but we were happy it wasn't us.
Was that hard to watch, though, to see these German prisoners blow themselves up, basically?
Yeah, well, it was. But they were Germans. They were the enemy. They didn't want to do it.
Who would?
Well, we certainly did enough of it.
So that was your welcome to the life or death stakes of war in that minefield.
Yes, it was.
But you also, as you said, your assignment heading over was to be a scout in a reconnaissance platoon.
Yeah.
What do you remember about getting the opportunity to carry out that duty?
Well, once we got the situation settled, we began to get wheels and weapons. So then we could do several things, and number of things.
When you would have to go out on one of these reconnaissance patrols as a scout, how many guys go with you, and what are you doing?
Well, it would vary as to numbers. We were considered scouts. They broke us off from the rest of the division in that we camped separately and ate separately and so forth.
So you would take a jeep out, trying to figure out where the enemy was, where some targets were? What would you do?
We had jeeps then. By that time we had jeeps, and we went out on patrol. We were very careful on patrol because you never knew what was going to be set off. The Germans were great at setting traps, and we had to watch it pretty carefully. We watched where they ran their equipment, and we tried to follow that thing, but you can't always do that. But I had a good bunch of guys. I didn't have any rank because the guys in the division didn't feel like we were capable of, although we were the guys that had the nasty work.
Well, and I want to understand what was nasty about it. So the whole purpose of having scouts is to make contact with the enemy, figure out where they are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that happened on a few occasions. I'm sure the enemy didn't like seeing you and maybe fired something your way.
That 88 cannon that they had no trajectory when they shot it. It was just flat. And so whatever they aimed at was what they hit. And they were much better than anything we had.
Do you have some of those shells come pretty close to you?
Yes, we did. We had high respect for them. Unfortunately, we were not always the ones who made the decision of it. Who's going to be where, but it was sort of nasty.
There's a story I read about you where a German plane was strafing you guys.
Yes, our platoon was out front all the time.
Sure.
And we'd been moving all night because the enemy's position and so forth was such that we had scouted out. And we had the room to move out, and we moved out and thought we pretty well had gotten past the nastiest part of their field artillery, and we were relaxing because we'd been working all night and had been running pretty well all night, and we knew that the Germans had some equipment around, but we didn't think they're as close as they were, and we were really relaxing and laying back, and all at once a German plane, a 109, came flying in. I'm laying there on my back. It was just a beautiful morning, and we had a wagon that followed our jeeps.
Mm-hmm.
We carried ammunition in it such things as some brandy or champagne or some other thing that the Germans might have carelessly left lying around. I think I had something that was very tasty lying there on my back, and next thing I know, here comes a airplane that's shooting at us and missed us, thank God. But it's pretty tough from the field to shoot a plane down or anything of that nature. And they come so fast, it's almost impossible to shoot it with a rifle.
Sure.
Now, we had a machine gun on one of our jeeps. We manned that, but golly, when that gun guys had come by. It was just a swoop.
Just making these strafing passes at you.
Yeah.
How close were the bullets coming to you?
Oh, I had some go through my shirt and what have you.
Went through the sleeve of your uniform, right under your arm?
Right under my arm, yeah.
Oof.
So, well, anyway, we had a couple of guys that got nicked. That was a Messerschmitt that was shooting at us.
Right, so this ME-109 has made one pass and come close to you.
Yeah.
You've had a bullet go through your sleeve. You got nowhere to take cover. He takes another pass,
yeah,
and you're thinking, boy, if he comes back around, we're dead.
Yeah, we've had it. And son of a gun, if a P-51, this is information I found out later, they had just put in new tanks that gave the P-51 a substantial distance.
Mm-hmm.
That was in those tanks.
Extended the range of the P-51?
So we were getting near the Rhine River. We were under the impression from all the information that we'd been able to get from our flyers that we were going to have a pretty tough time there. And the P-51 just outclassed the German. It was a dogfight right out in front of us, covering half a dozen battlefields in effect. So they were really put on it. If you wanted somebody to make a movie, it was perfect. And especially when we were the beneficiaries of the...
Well, yeah, and I want people to understand this because everyone's heard of dogfights, and a lot of people have this impression that dogfights happen all the time in war. In reality, it was very seldom you'd actually, especially a one-on-one battle between two fighter pilots.
Yeah.
But that's what you witnessed.
That's what we witnessed.
And if that P-51 pilot hadn't come right when he did...
We would have been dead.
Right.
We were in an open field and no cover.
So I guess you're a fan of P-51s.
Oh, I love that P-51. Subsequently, I have seen a number of them that we have in the general vicinity here.
You know, I'm thinking back. I wish I would have known that when we sent you and a bunch of other veterans off to Washington, D.C., because we had a P-51 fly right over you at the old Castle Air Force Base. Do you remember that?
I remember that. Yes, I do. I remember very, very well.
He flew pretty low, too, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He did. And I think he had the larger tank.
Uh-huh.
It was amazing that tanks were added just before they went to the Rhine River.
So you're saying also, not only did the P-51 come at just the right time for you, but they added those extra fuel tanks just in time for him to be able to reach you.
That's right.
So this was a pretty advantageous situation for you.
Absolutely. You can't imagine how happy we were.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because as you told that story, I think I saw a little emotion start to well up in your eyes a little bit. You remember, you were probably thinking you might not last a few more minutes there.
That's right. We thought we were dead men.
Is that a feeling that you had throughout the war, that, you know, this day could be my last? Did you feel that fear, or did you have that air of invincibility?
We had a lot of skill, we felt, in our crew. The only thing that bothered us a bit was we didn't have the support of our division.
You guys were kind of ostracized as the newbies, the college boys.
Yeah, we were, and we didn't realize how much they literally, I say, hated us. It's hard to feel like somebody hates you, but it's the best description I can think of, because I found out later that we got sent on a mission after some night work that we were doing for them to get into the city that were nearby. I can remember being told that we've got to get in there. It's vital that we take that town.
Mm-hmm.
And we plunged down through without any aerial help or anything of that nature or any visual information from those on the ground. It was our whole squad of jeeps and my platoon. We flew like the devil into this town that we were to be attacking and had just stopped. And I'm standing here in front of this brick building and one of our shells, bigger shells, comes flying in and hits above my head about the height of average building. Went through the bricks and on into the building, and then other shots began to fly in.
And you said one of our shells, not their shells. This is American artillery that's coming into where you are?
Well, when that went through over my head, well, then we went for cover, and we went for cover inside the brick building that was sitting right next to us there. And one of our guys said something like, well, German shells coming in, it's going to really raise hell with us. We got to get someone out to our guys. there was probably 8 or 10 of us in this basement. One of the ladies was there, was a German, but she spoke pretty fair English. The lady said, well, no, those are not German shells, those are American. And that was a little hard for us to believe. But anyway, from there, I took a squad and went out to find our guys. It took a little while to find our guys. We did find them. It's hard to tell exactly what was happening, but they were our shells rather than enemy shells. And that had to be under the auspice of someone in our division.
Was it just a lapse in communication?
I'd like to say that, but based on the things that happened, I was quite convinced that our people pulled a funny on us, or no, not a funny, but a dangerous trip on us, and actually were having us shelled.
You suspected they did it on purpose?
Yes, but they wouldn't let us look at anything that might support that.
So you came back and asked them, what were you doing?
Yeah, we did.
And they said it was an accident?
Yeah, it just happens once in a while. We just can't prevent it.
Now, I want to be clear. Do you think they were trying to get you guys killed or just play a trick on you?
They were trying to kill us.
You really believe that?
Yes, I do.
Your own guys?
Our own guys.
Wow.
It wasn't the whole group, but it was one officer. This is about best I can find out. One officer and his group that he was in charge of was doing this with malice.
Ouch.
That just really, that blew our minds.
Yeah, I think you're blowing a few people's minds right now. And speaking of things that are impossible to fathom, had you, this whole time that you're in the service and that this war's going on, had you ever heard anything about how the Nazis were treating the Jewish people or these other prisoners that they were holding?
We were sent out on patrol one morning, very early, and were told we might find something special, but we didn't know what it was for sure.
Huh.
But I think it was some of our air guys that spotted it. I was told to take my squad, there were just 6 of us, and check out this facility that they'd been able to spot. And they gave me the coordinates and sent a tank with me, one tank. And then the rest of my guys that were, well, there was 6 of us in jeeps. And we spotted on the hill some fencing, metal fencing. And it was pretty heavy duty and pretty thorough height-wise. So we headed for it. The closer we got to it, the more we realized it was a big, pretty big place.
And this is April 4th, 1945. There hasn't been a single concentration camp liberated yet or discovered by the Americans.
That's right. There was talk of something of that nature, but no specifics.
So you haven't heard stories, you haven't seen images, you have no idea what you're stumbling across?
No, not at all.
So you see the fence, you head toward it.
We head for it, and at the gate, I was first one in. And there were just 6 of us that were with weapons there. And here at the gate, inside, it's sort of a double gate, are 6 young men that had just been executed.
And you had heard something, I think, hadn't you?
Yeah, we heard some shooting, and so we went cautious as hell.
Well, you're on the way there, you heard shots, but you didn't see anything heading your way.
No.
So then you get there, and you see these bodies, and that tells you what the shots were?
Yep, there were 6 bodies. The blood was there and what have you. So it was just been done, like it was meant as a token to us or something of this nature, or a warning to us, whatever you might say. There's either 6 or 8. 3 were Americans.
How could you tell?
The way their patches were on their arms.
They were in uniform?
They were in uniform.
So they had been captured?
They had been captured and then executed.
So that's a little alarming.
It shook us up pretty bad.
And who were the other ones?
They were British, but when we went in, very carefully because we didn't know we began to see like 3 or 4 football fields in a row, and down at the bottom of it, not quite all the way, but was a railroad track where they had been burning and were still burning bodies. There were headquarters building and all the rest of it there, and I didn't want us to get caught in a bad spot, so the 6 of us, I divided them up. You do this and do this and so on. And I went through the buildings that were there. There were some headquarter buildings to see if there's by any chance anyone there that would be. Well, I didn't know for sure what the hell we had.
Yeah, someone could be waiting to kill you.
Yeah. So we went by 2s to the buildings. And they were fairly high buildings. So then we came down as it began to get lighter. Here were, and I've got some pictures of some of the bodies. What they had done was taken prisoners, and I think these are mostly Germans who weren't Nazis.
Uh-huh.
They had been gassed or poisoned, and then their bodies were put in rail cars. They were sort of an open-air rail car, full, absolutely right to the brim, boxes of bodies.
I know you've told your story many times over the years, so you're used to describing this now. But at the time, as a young man who's never seen anything like this before.
God, it just really throws you. And we were six of us and quite a few of the Germans there. And I was concerned that we might be trapping ourselves. And we had to be pretty darn careful. But that's what was happening, was bodies are being delivered from some central point.
You saw these cars actually coming down the railroad.
And being burned.
So it almost leaves you with the impression that this is an effort to burn the evidence, to hide the truth of what had happened there.
Yes, you're suspicious of that.
And I know that all of that was really overwhelming, but I can't imagine anything more weighty than the decision you'd be forced to make there. When we come back, Ralph will reveal what one of the Jewish prisoners at Ohrdruf asked him for. You can imagine yourself in his position and consider what you might do. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say, I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank, it's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 800 veterans have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.